When I was very young, as you know, Bling Bling King days, I was selling clothes. So I had to be a walking billboard, right? I was wearing mad unnecessary clothes.
Well,
right?
What, like, did you have?
Like, I was walking around with like a 1,000-pound coat for no reason, like when I'm 16, 17.
I love but the Bilal was like a walking billboard. You're like, I got a rep.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I can't be the Bling Bling Empire
that,
King.
That was
and be wearing Old Navy.
My thing was, everything I wear, I have to be able to sell it. So like, if I'm wearing a hoodie, you got to be able to buy it, the hat, etc. But I don't want it to be like Avericks on it, or like, do you know the craziest one? Do you remember Evisu? E-V-I-S-U?
Well, I remember I had Evisu. With that's Japanese.
Yeah. Do you remember the Busta Rhymes one with the 20 pockets?
Dude, the 20 pockets, and then also the God. When you're wearing the jeans.
On the bottom, yeah, you roll them up.
Bro.
With the Timberland boots on underneath. Yeah. Oh, welcome to another episode of Not Investment Advice. We've got Trung Fan, Bilal Zaidi. Unfortunately, Jack can't make it today. Trung, what's going on, mate? Where did you see the solar eclipse? What was the situation in Canada?
Well, let me ask you, dude, because you're in the path of it. I had no solar eclipse exposure, whereas you have the solar eclipse exposure, and you were in New York for the earthquake on Friday. Can you actually tell the listeners about the New York earthquake?
Yeah, and there's a siren just in good timing as well. I mean, I'm just hoping I don't jinx stuff, because, man, there was supposed to be aftershocks. There was also one aftershock that I felt. And it's just weird, because have you been in an earthquake before?
I mean, I've had it happen in Vancouver, which, by the way, is sitting on one of the biggest fault lines in the world.
Really?
We're waiting for a massive one.
Oh,
actually,
my God.
We'll expand this segment. But the reason why I bring that up is I've experienced in the sense of, like, you wake up and see notifications like there's an earthquake at 3 a.m. You're like, I totally missed it.
Oh, no. This one was like happening while I was in the, I think we were texting about it.
But let us know.
Yeah,
brother.
I was just,
us.
I'm trying to think, what was I doing? I think I was cooking or something in the kitchen, and I started feeling a shake, and I was like, damn, that subway is really fucking loud today. And then like about 3 seconds later, I was like, wait a minute, I don't even really live above the subway. What am I talking about? You know, just being in New York for that long, you just assume it's either a subway or it's like a massive truck going past. That does happen sometimes. So it felt like that, but it just kept going. And I was like, oh shit, that's quite a lot. But then I was in my head, I was like, are there even earthquakes in New York? I didn't even know that was a thing.
Experienced one before? Never?
Do you know what? I feel like I was in Mexico City or something. It happened. But it was one of the, when I was a kid in the UK, I think there was kind of a small one as well, but it wasn't that serious. This one was probably like 20-30 seconds, I think, and it was going on for a while. And the funny thing, my girl who's from California was the most chill. She was like what? And she's not even the type to be like, oh my God, I've experienced worse than this. She's just literally was super chill about it, and I was like getting shook, you know, I was just like, what the hell is going on? And then
you're shook one, bro. Mob Deep.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was a little, I'm not gonna lie, it was kind of scary. I mean, because I've always got this anxiety, like when I spent a few months in Mexico City, I can't remember who planted the seed, but someone told me that they're like waiting for the next big
Mexico
one.
Mexico had a massive earthquake. Do you know when that was?
No, it was a long time ago, but because of that, they keep saying, oh, they're due for one. And I remember just waking, like trying to sleep at night. And once it's planted in your head, you're like, oh man, it's kind of hard to relax after that for me. But anyway, yeah, so it was
Hold on a second. Let's do a little history here on earthquakes.
Yeah.
Mexico had an 8.0 earthquake in 1985. Massive. $5 billion
man,
damage.
That's tough, man. Yeah. Well, the other thing is here, I wasn't sure.
8,000 dead. Jeez.
That's terrible. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing I don't want to joke about,
right?
Because it's
no, we're not joking about it.
Obviously, hopefully it doesn't happen again or something like that. But it was kind of funny seeing the reaction on Twitter, though, because I did go to Twitter straight away. I was checking, like, was this an earthquake or was it not? And obviously, that's the best place to go for that.
I mean, this is, again, not to make light of the situation, but although we are making light, because New York's wasn't a real, it's 4.8,
God,
right?
People were, yeah.
No,
yeah.
But this is the thing. We were sharing people losing their minds on Twitter with the funniest jokes in the world.
Yeah,
like there
was
one with Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City, and she's like, you know, she's fake writing her blog post. It's like, well, as I felt the earth shake, I was wondering if me and Big were on shaky ground. And then another person retweeted that and went, Samantha was across town experiencing other tremors. Which, if you know Sex and the City, that is hysterical. But the thing I'll point out.
Are you a big Sex and the City fan? Have you watched
all? I watched all that.
We were just talking about watching it again from the beginning because I haven't really watched that much, but I'm down to do it. I mean, you got to just lean into
the. Oh, you got it, right? It's like rewatch Sopranos, rewatch The Wire. But I mean,
I like the way you contrasted the Sex and the City with the most. You're like, I watched The Godfather and Scarface.
No,
17 times. You know,
you have to remember, we're in Segway City now. This is what happens when Jack's not here. We just go ham.
That's what we got to do. Yeah.
Well, it's not just that they're the classics. They all came out at the same time. The Wire, Sopranos, and Sex and the City. This is all the beginning of quote unquote prestige TV, right? Late 90s, early 2000s, when HBO was just let anything fly. And, but the whole point we're trying to bring up, got off track, was the earthquake was obviously New York's earthquake was juxtaposed with the one in Taiwan, right? Which is on a real fault line. Like, what's it called? The rim of fire. I mean, when you talk about tectonic plates, let me see this. Tectonic plates, the ring of fire. It's the biggest, 75% of the Earth's volcanoes are on these tectonic plates, which is why it's called the ring of fire. And I know volcanoes are referring to volcanoes, but it's also implicated in these earthquakes. Taiwan, obviously, within the Ring of Fire. But what people have to remember is like a 4.8, so call it a 5. So one of the funniest tweets was a 5 in New York is an 8 anywhere else.
That was good. That was very good.
So there's
and then someone else said a 5 in New York is a 2 in LA or something like that. It was just that joke. Yeah, that was good. Right? People were doing a good job of it. I'm all for making jokes. It's just, I was just, that's one of those things I'm obviously shook up.
You're a shook one, man. You're shook.
No, stuff like that, I'm shook up. Like, because it's one of those, man, like, without going in detail, last few months have been a bit hectic. And I'm man, is this, after all this, this is the way I'm going to go? It's for a fucking earthquake in New York? Like, I specifically live here because one of the things I don't worry about is that. You know
it's
what
earthquakes.
I mean?
So, well, you're like, I love that. Blau did a trade-off for living in New York. The trade-off in the con column, there's like 100 things. And the pro column is like being good food, around other cool people, no earthquakes. It's like three things.
But, a lot of eights. Also, you gotta add that in that column. To be fair,
well, but somebody anyway, added. No, hold on. We're not ending this. Another great tweet was in all caps. I can't die in a studio apartment.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, oh, I felt
all
that
right,
one.
So let's pivot this.
Sorry, could I just say one? Just because we're off track, we might as well keep going.
Yeah.
One of the crazy, this is true. This happened to me when I first moved there, right? It was almost 11 years ago, summer, June 2013. I lived in a studio apartment, right? Like downtown West Village, like doing that Sex in the City lifestyle as Trung has seen. But the very masculine version, obviously, on my tree lined block, right? But man, when I left that place, I think I was there for 4 years and I had this great neighbors. Like he's an entertainment lawyer and his wife was an actress. And as I left, they just had a baby and they like came to say bye to me or whatever. And then as I was leaving, they were like, oh, by the way, have they rented out your place yet? And I was like, no, why? Do you know you got like someone who needs it or something? She's like, well, since we've had the baby, our dog's been getting jealous. So we were thinking about maybe taking that and like renting it so he could use it. And I was like, what the are you? I'm a grown man, been living in the studio my whole damn adult life here, and you're going to have a dog living in it. So anyway, that just reminded me of that, man, because that studio life
is... But
they
had a second room just for the dog.
I mean, they didn't, but they were contemplating paying several thousand dollars a month for a tiny little studio just so that their dog could run around. The same place where I was living, which is pretty terrible. Anyway, so go on, Trung.
We're not done yet. No, I got one more thought. And to round this out, we were talking about laughing at the memes, okay? So New York had a 5 earthquake. You have to remember on the Richter scale, when it goes to 5 to 6, that's an order of magnitude. It's 10 times stronger. So a 5 to 7 is not 2 times stronger.
Oh, is it just in terms of destruction? Because it's
it's 100 times stronger, curve, basically. Right? So a 5 to 8 is 1,000 times stronger. But anyways, the reason I bring all that up, karma for me laughing at all these memes on Friday will be Vancouver's waiting for the big one. Like,
dude, this
we're on one. Dude, there's a New York article talking about how one of the biggest earthquakes waiting to happen is the Pacific Northwest. And I shouldn't have liked all those memes, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, when now you hits. Got me thinking. Do you know in my office where hits. I'm right now, I have karma. A bed that rolls, you know, what's it called? A Murphy bed that goes up against the wall.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, I'll be here podcasting away and there's an earthquake. And imagine that's how you go, that a bed hits you. That all right, let's keep it moving.
Too dark. I don't want to solar. Jinx it. Solar eclipse yesterday. Total solar eclipse. Again, for New York, crazy. You guys had a lot of things going on this past week.
I didn't have the
you
glasses.
You were in the path. You were in the path from Texas to Maine.
I'm just going to be 100% honest here. I didn't get to see it.
Oh, you did?
It's really sad because I completely owned my schedule and I messed up with the scheduling. And literally, I was doing my taxes. That's how bad it is. Literally, the thing of the world that I hate doing the most, I was doing it. And outside my window, I could see everyone looking. And I kind of looked from my window, to be fair, but I didn't see it fully. Like, I just saw everything went dark, which was kind of cool.
Okay,
but
so
I didn't,
go
outside, which is funny because I literally spent all day around outside. And the one day I decided to be indoors for 5 hours to do my taxes was yesterday. But anyway,
hey,
yeah,
Bilal, what about... Don't worry, man. The next one's
you can't see it in Canada, obviously. Yeah, exactly.
No,
you obviously can't see in Canada, right?
Well, I'll show you where you'll see the path here. So the next total lunar eclipse in North America is 2044. So actually, if you look at this map for the listeners, I'm showing a map of where the lunar eclipse path was. It actually hit Toronto, parts of Ontario, right? So you'll appreciate this, dude. Here's a little business segment. People are like, what the hell are these guys talking about? So we'll talk a little bit business. This is a very interesting chart. I'll show it to you again, Bilal. For the listeners, it's showing the total eclipse path, but it's shown against Airbnb occupancies.
So good.
Dude, look how great of a chart
up
is
up and
this?
To the right, but literally
up
not
to the
really
right.
related to a
yeah,
graph,
but
just through
reasons.
The path. Yeah.
So the path of the path of the total solar lunar eclipse, apparently it added $6 billion to the U.S. economy yesterday.
Wow.
In terms of people renting and eating out in along that path. So a couple of things I'll point out from that chart that we just showed, but I took it off so I can look at Bilal properly now. Typically, on a Sunday night, which is the night before the total lunar eclipse on Monday, occupancy in April is 30%. 92% Airbnb occupancy on a Sunday. But here's where it gets interesting though. So you know, like a Sleepy Eight motel, those places, the chain hotels, jacked up their pre-eclipse rent rental rates by 50 to 100%. So whatever, how much is a Sleepy Eight? Like $100 a night? They're charging $200. Airbnb, obviously run primarily by single proprietors. Some corporate people run those things, but single proprietor, they're not as business savvy. They weren't looking out the calendar
they
many
need
months
that
in
dynamic
advance.
Pricing bot, man.
Yeah,
that's what you need
exactly
for if you're doing that.
So the average price on Airbnb across the path of the solar eclipse, 92,000 apartments or rooms, was $250. That was only 10% more than last week. So how much money was left on the table, right?
Yeah.
But the economists crunched the numbers. The occupancy rate being at 90% versus 30, and then the 10% rental jump added about 40 million to renters in cumulative revenue increases. But because they weren't as savvy as these chains and they didn't jack it up by 100%, they probably left 20 million consumer surplus. So I thought that was an interesting business segment.
But that's very interesting. And one other thing I'd say, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I did hear, I think the trading volume for yesterday was down significantly though. Not just crypto, but like across the board for stock market. Obviously Wednesday, we're recording this Tuesday. Wednesday, I think, is a CPI report, whatever. That might have some impact. A lot of people kind of holding out to do stuff. But I think it was one of the quietest days of the year for trading. And obviously, if you just think about how many people were not working, essentially, as well. So, it's, you know, you said the other side to this, which is more people went out, more people spent money on food, on Airbnbs. But then in terms of, you know, I'm American here, the productivity of the economy was also probably down. Because when something like this happens across, like, you know, how many people, everyone was kind of like talking about it, right? Like the whole social feed, everyone was out looking at it, which is really cool. So yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot more things
no,
than,
but you
more
hit
important
on something,
than productivity,
right?
But it's kind
no, but
of
you
interesting
hit
thing.
I think what it demonstrated was this thirst or communal events. There's a very viral photo. I don't know if you saw it, but it was
in
like
IRL, in real life, being in real outside life, right? With people too. Yeah,
there was a photo of a plane leaving Little Rock, Arkansas, I believe, and every single person on it was flying somewhere to go see the total solar lunar eclipse, which is amazing.
Yeah, I had a few friends who did that with their kids. It's
right?
Pretty cool.
That's,
yeah.
Dude, it's like, I felt bad that I didn't know that this, I didn't even know this total solar lunar eclipse was happening until I saw the memes on Saturday. And then
it was too late by
like,
then, right?
I wish I had planned in advance, but let's leave on this. Let's leave on the meme of the weeks. So I got two of them from yesterday. There's so many, but here we go. Meme of the weeks were the solar ones. There's so many good ones. These were two of the best in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, this is good. I saw
one from Evan Thomas was he showed like the solar lunar, the moon covers the sun. And then in the next panel, it's like the leave a tip 15, 20, 25%, which is like for some reason so funny. I think this one had like 180,000 likes. And then shout out to the boy Ramp Capital, a friend of the pod. He writes, if the sun can black out on a Monday afternoon, so can I. And I want to add something to that. And I know Ramp listens to a couple of episodes. So Ramp, if you're listening, let me jump on by saying I have a pretty atypical schedule. People are not going to be shocked by this. I spend a lot of my day, like just whatever my kid's doing. He goes to school. I try to get some work in when he's not at school, try to hang out with him. But read, write, weird hours. When I need my fix of a little boozy hours, I can only do between 1 and 5. So like I'm living the total solar eclipse.
Wait, 1 p.m. to
between
5 p.m.
1 p.m. and 5 p.m.
Oh, that's the best time for it.
I do not want a single drop of alcohol after 5 p.m. because it's going to ruin my sleep. But if you go from 1 to 5, you have a chance at working off the booze by the time you go to sleep. But anything after 5, you don't have a chance. If I can get gas between 1 and 3, that's just the money zone. Just like slam back 5 to 10 between 1 and 3. Not doing it a lot. I'm just saying that's my
It's outlook. Almost like right after this where it's going to be 3 p.m. on the Champions League quarterfinal day.
Oh!
And you know that's the and the sun is out in
are
New York 70
are you going
degrees
to a
today.
Bar? Be honest.
I mean,
are you going to
all
bar?
Jokes aside, I'm actually not. I don't think I will. I'll see if I get tempted. But I already went on the weekend, which was great. But I might have to because basically now the next 10 games for the next 6 weeks, every game is like a final. Basically.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah,
you live in New York.
Yeah,
you have to go through some pretty bad weather for a lot of the year. Obviously, a lot of places to go to bad weather, East Coast, but the summer is obviously amazing. When you see the sun, do you just have urge to get
the
booze
best.
On? Like, do not, you do, right?
Well, that too, but also I think it's just getting out. Like, and also your happiness level just goes up exponentially, right?
Through
like,
the roof.
Again, this is like bro discover sunshine. I get it. Like, we know. But talking of which, I do want to also share this because I wasn't sure if this was just a joke because I shared it with you guys, but I just checked on Google Trends. Let me just share my screen here. Searches for why do my eyes hurt and my eyes hurt have gone up significantly in the last day. That's 30 days, but let's just look, even 7 days. You can see this literally ramped up.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like literally people was directly looking at the sun and wondering why. But anyway, so that is the meme of the weeks here. And let's talk about the actual topics we got here, Trunk. So we've got this Amazon Go situation. So we're going to talk about that. For people who don't know, remember there was these concept stores for Amazon where you would just go in, buy your stuff and just walk out. And they called it just walk out technology. And I think they're shutting that down completely, right? Or is it just certain places?
I think the idea of they're just going to run a bunch of these stores, I think they're putting a stop to that.
Yeah, and it was an experiment, so fair enough for them to try it out. So we're going to talk about that. And then the Hermes antitrust case, there's something interesting there. And we've got a few other things. We'll see if we get to them. But should we start on the Amazon?
Yeah.
Go.
So why don't you read through what you've seen?
Yeah, this is what I've seen so far. Let me just pull up this tweet here. I mean, I pretty much just saw the headline. Amazon's Just Walk Out technology, which was pitched as a magical AI technology, was actually 1,000 contractors in India acting as virtual cashiers, identifying what people put in their carts and tracking their purchases. It will be replaced by shopping carts with scanners. I don't know if that's verified because I think you said you looked into this. The only thing I want to pull up before is Naval's tweet, which says, in most pitch decks, AI stands for Anonymous Indians, which perfectly
one of the
sums
most
that up.
Legendary,
that's hilarious.
One of the most legendary tweets ever, right? Like, what year did he do that one? What year did he do that?
Let me pull that up. It was, I mean, he was ahead of the curve on this one because it's, what year is that? It was 2020, February 7th, 2020.
You know what? I got a bit of a story. I used to work at a fintech company, and that company was acquired by S&P Global in the late 2010s. But the point I want to bring up was when I saw that Naval tweet, I laughed so hard because one of the things the company I worked for did was we would collect dates like of news events. Like, for example, every time an earthquake happened, right? You could run asset prices against it. Who do you think collected all the dates of every time an earthquake happened? It
Anonymous
was literally
Indians.
A team in Bangalore.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When I saw Naval type Anonymous Indians,
brilliant.
I'm not even pointing at just Indians. It's like you could see tagging
anywhere remote,
China, Philippines, any lower income country, right? But the thing, I think this was a nuance. The main story here is that Amazon, as with anything that has to do with AI, there's so much hype involved, right? And Amazon's whole shtick was, it's all AI. You're going to walk in. We're going to know your Prime account. We're going to scan with computer vision. You're going to walk out and everything will be paid for. My first question when I saw this was this. I had two questions. One statement, one question. The statement is, wow, that's cool. The second, here's a question. What difference does this make? Who cares? Like, is this any different? There's like a 2 second difference in me checking my own stuff out. And some people might say, well, at least you're not checking your own stuff out, which is annoying, right? How all these retail places.
I will say efficiency wise, if you think of it from their
scale. You save 30
seconds?
No,
not you. No, not you. I'm saying for the company.
Oh, you're saying throughput, like they can
throughput.
Have way more people.
Yeah, because like Uniqlo, have you been in Uniqlo recently?
Oh, yeah.
Their ones actually work really well. Like I use that all the time. You go in, you just throw down your bag. It just automatically knows, right? And you'd walk out pretty much.
Okay,
like,
you know
pay
what?
And, but,
you got me.
But with
right.
with groceries, I often when I go to a proper grocery store, which honestly is not out much now because I normally do it online. But when I do, there is a bit of a wait, especially in New York. Like you're waiting every time. And so... we talked about transport economics last time, right? Like just having that efficiency. Obviously for my life, I don't care if I wait a few minutes. It's not a big deal. But just at a company level, I think of it as like Amazon, they and Google, all these companies, how much time and energy they spend on like the conversion rate optimization, they call it, right? Online, right? So,
and now they're doing it in real life.
Yeah, they're doing it in real life. And so when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's actually smart from a business point of view, obviously. If it works. But yeah, like as a consumer, I don't care that much, but I do think like Trader Joe's, man, if you go to Trader Joe's in New York, you walk in the store, there's literally a line as you
it's
walk
massive.
In. You basically have to look. So like that sort of stuff, longer term, I could see how it would actually make their business way more efficient. But as a person, I don't really care. Like if you're waiting a few minutes for stuff, it's not end of the world.
No, you got me, Bilal.
It's part
I'm
of the
180-ing
fun.
My statement. I'm completely 180-ing it.
Okay.
In Amazon's world, if they delivered on this vision, but it's the same thing. Remember when Jeff Bezos, like a decade ago, did that drone demonstration on 60 Minutes? That was a decade ago. There's no drone delivery.
Oh,
in
that's
New
true.
York now,
yeah,
right?
yeah.
Remember
that?
It's like, but to your point, I 100% 180 on this. The vision that Amazon had of this world, where you literally just go in, they know who you are, you walk out, incredible, right?
And also cost savings, right? For them, like again, just think it because the grocery business just, again, from a business point of view, I don't know the exact numbers.
So low margin.
It's basically 3-4%, like from what I remember off the top of my head. It's like 3-4% margin. So if you can, that's the only way to really like take it up a level for them. And when they bought Whole Foods, I can see why that conceptually would make sense. But yeah, let's see. I mean, you said you looked into this. Was this actually...
No, here's the difference. I want to signify the clear difference here.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessary that there were 1,000 Indians, like I don't even know how many stores there were. There were probably 10 that were claiming to be full walkout. They were tagging after the fact. as in,
got it.
Did the machine register?
Yeah,
correctly.
Okay.
Well,
that's just QA. That's just
right?
that quality assurance. Yeah,
that's quality assurance. But it still looks not great, right? And it was also.
It looks like that Silicon Valley episode. Sorry, like, do you remember the episode where they
hot dog?
They,
no hot dog.
Yeah. that's so good.
No, but I mean, like, it literally. They were training to see if the visuals they got was correct. So this is a summary. To Bilal's point, and I agree with that 180, if Amazon delivered on this and made this possible, walk in, walk out, that would be a huge time saver. To Bilal's point, we didn't mention it. Amazon does like $400 billion a year in revenue, right? I mean, all of that, a lot of that's online, but the grocery business, if Amazon could crack this, I mean, remember, they spent $16 billion in Whole Foods to like learn, right? To learn about the grocery business. So agreed. Was it actually as bad as people said? No.
Yeah.
But I think this is the takeaway. They're so far away from that reality. And it looked like to have thousands of these stores, probably not going to happen, right?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, I would just say that I do think a lot of these ideas that we see, especially in the 2010s, you know, Google Glass, like all of these, put them in where you get this video and you're like, wow. I mean, honestly, a lot of the AI stuff now as well, right? Like that's the same ideas. Like, wow, you're going to press this button on a computer and this happens. Or like you said, a robot is going to come and deliver DoorDash to you, or drones are going to drop it in front of your house. And to be fair, a lot of these things are actually being worked on. Like there are robots delivering in San Francisco and stuff like that. And I can see longer term that happening. I think a lot of people were kind of shitting on them for this. Not that much, but they were kind of like, oh, this is just a bunch of people in the background and you're pretending. And like you said, it isn't actually that. It's more humans are still a part of the process. And that's always going to be the case, especially in the early stages when you're still testing it out. So, but yeah, there was really just the reason we wanted to bring up the Naval tweet, because that was a banger tweet from him.
No, but you know what? You brought up a nice thing that we can jump on, that we can add to the chat, is the Uniqlo stuff. It's actually fascinating. I'll give you a little backstory on, for the listeners that don't know about Uniqlo, you can now take, let's say you shop at Uniqlo, you pick up, first of all, heat tech. Their heat tech, incredible. If you don't have Uniqlo heat tech, go to Uniqlo, get some heat techs, those tidy pants and those tops.
I got a bunch of those, yeah.
You got a bunch, right? And not gonna lie, they fit real well. So you look a little bit more swole than you might otherwise, yeah? So
after that,
After that C4, son. Yeah. But you basically take all this clothes that you have and you drop it into a bin. They all have RFID tags and it just instantly calculates for you. But here's, I'll ask this first. Blah. How magical is that self-checkout versus the bullshit self-checkout where you got to scan everything individually?
Yeah. I after I do that, I want to ask for a tip. You know, I'm like, I've been tipping at coffee shops for less than this. I've been doing my own work here. No, but there is, it's kind of like Costco as well. Like, you know, when you leave, there's someone who checks your bag. I don't know if you were going to bring that up, but with Uniqlo, when you leave, they do have a look. So there is a human still interaction.
The cashier. Yeah,
but just again, efficiency-wise, it is like one person versus 10, right? Or versus five or whatever.
But here's the amazing thing. There's a technology story behind that for Uniqlo. Is they had to wait about a decade. So they had this idea to do exactly what you're talking about. Because RFID tags have been around for decades. But they needed those tags to drop from like, I don't know, call it, I think it was like 65 cents a tag to like under 10 cents, even in the single digit pennies.
To make it like a,
because they use a billion of them. Use billions of them. But like,
sorry, so cost effective enough. That's what I'm going to say.
For them to do that, since technology has been around. Yeah, but feasible. Like now, it's amazing when you actually use it. But the other thing to juxtapose with Just Walk Out is the clothing is quite much higher margin, right? So like, you can have this dump and it kind of makes sense. And
number of SKUs wise, I don't know the exact
number of
SKUs is probably way less, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, compared to groceries, it's like one of the highest number of SKUs, right?
And the fruits are all different. And
you
got to
weigh them and stuff like
100%.
That. Yeah, that's true.
So I love how we just pivoted into a conversation about Uniqlo's self-checkout.
Uniqlo, I'll be honest, like more than half my clothes from Uniqlo. I think they're
I love the clothes,
brilliant.
Dude.
It's brilliant.
So like, well, let's talk about this. Did you graduate? Because there's this whole fast fashion world, right? Did you graduate from like, you know, as you get make more money, you start off at Gap, right? That's kind of the thing. And then you move into the Zara H&M zone. Technically, Uniqlo, which is owned by a company called Fast Retailing in Japan. I think Japan's richest person or top five richest person is the guy that owns Fast Retailing / Uniqlo. So did you do that ladder? What was your ladder?
Mine is funny because mine is maybe almost opposite. Not complete opposite, because when I was very young, as you know, bling bling king days, I was selling clothes. So I had to be a walking billboard, right? I was wearing mad unnecessary clothes.
Well,
right?
What did you have?
I was rocking Stone Island the last time it was in fashion. Like,
what about FUBU? Aniche?
Oh, I didn't do FUBU, but like, because there was a line where it was, in air quotes, urban enough. Like I would wear Echo, I would wear in the UK, Echo, Academics. There were a few of these kind of like hip hoppy brands, but FUBU was straight up like that. That was like not for me to wear back then, you know? So, but there was like Avericks jackets. They were these massive leather jackets, but then they were kind of like the more urban-y kind of like streetwear clothes. And then quite quickly, even at that age, I went very much into like the slightly higher, like it was kind of expensive. It was way more than I should be spending. Like I was walking around with like £1,000 coat for no reason, like when I'm 16, 17.
But the Bilal was like a walking bill. You're like, I got a rep.
Oh,
I can't be the bling bling empire king.
That was
and be wearing old Navy.
My thing was everything I wear, I have to be able to sell it. So like if I'm wearing a hoodie, you got to be able to buy it, the hat, etc. But what I'm saying is then it went the opposite. Then when I went to college, because I let it out my system a bit. And then I just went to like, oh, good quality, but reasonably priced. And I've stayed on that for a while. Now I've kind of been in the 20s. I think it was a bit like the basics, like a t-shirt. I don't need a $100 t-shirt most of the time. Like I just want basic $20 t-shirt. And then now I've got back to like understated stuff. Like I don't want it to be too flashy, obviously, but like good quality. So I'm happy to spend money on like a nice shirt, nice jeans, stuff like that. Where it's like Goodmint or like cashmere. Like if you're going to buy like a sweater, like you can get a nice one because you're going to keep that for a long time. Do you know what I mean? But I don't want it to be like Avericks on it or like, do you know the craziest one? Do you remember Evisu? E-V-I-S-U?
Well, I remember I had Evisu. With that's Japanese.
Yeah. Do you remember the Busta Rhymes one with the 20 pockets?
Dude, the 20 pockets. And then when you're wearing the jeans.
On the bottom. Yeah. You roll them up. Yeah.
Bro.
With the Timberland boots on underneath.
I love how we're talking about, you're mentioning how you don't want the big logo. This might be a perfect transition for the Hermes.
Yeah.
Hermes is not very loud, right?
Yeah.
And so let's try
that
this.
European
let's
rich.
Let's give people a TLDR of what we're going to talk about. Actually, so Bilal had said, I don't know much about this, but Bilal, you understand quiet luxury versus loud luxury, right? Man. Yo, Rafa, don't cut that cough out. Let people know we real. Yeah. Let people...
No cuts today. He's adding it in for no reason now.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, God's sake.
Yo, like these podcasts that are super cut and tight. There's wasted seconds and minutes here. This is
keeping
real,
it real.
People.
This is keeping this is real. It real. Yeah.
This is keeping it real. And this is why the listenership is just like steady, steady, right? We're not doing these growth
hacks. It's like a Costco hot dog price. You know what I mean?
Bro,
150.
We're not doing these growth. We're real. You know what? When everything's fake because the AI and people are looking for the real, they're going to know where to come. We're here for the long game, baby. We're here for the long game. Anyways, so Hermes. This one's a couple weeks old. The main story's old. It hasn't been resolved yet. But the story is timeless because Hermes is timeless. There's an antitrust lawsuit for Hermes. And for people that don't know about Hermes, which was basically like me a year ago, but I get nonstop hounded by the missus. Well, let me ask you, Bilal. Have you ever walked into an Hermes store with your significant other and then she talks about how she wants XYZ?
No, thankfully not. But
no, okay. But I guarantee
you. Sounds like
you
have before I say anything else.
Yes, sir. And I know a lot of
the make of the Birkin
podcast.
Bag, right? They made the Birkin bag.
It's the crown jewel of the luxury industry.
Yeah, it's like if there was a luxury good that you want to study, it's the Hermes bag.
It's the Birkin bag.
Sorry, I meant to say.
We talked about Sex and the City earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
They have an entire episode about how hard it is to get a Birkin bag. So let me set it up like this. There's an antitrust case about how Hermes sells its Birkin bag. So that's a setup. For people that have no idea what that means, it's this. Hermes will not sell you a Birkin bag if you walk in their store. You cannot walk into... You can be the richest person in
can't
the world.
Can't be luxury if it's that easily accessible.
Well,
that's the point.
I mean, I guess if Bernardo Noh, the richest person in the world, walks in Hermes, they might make an exception.
They make an exception for old
but if
matey
you're
over
a Deca,
there,
if you are listening to this podcast and you're a Deca millionaire, A, cool. Congratulations. You're a Deca
thanks
millionaire.
Thanks for listening.
B, thanks for listening. C, you cannot walk into an Hermes for the first time if you've never been and be like, hey, listen, I'm a Deca millionaire. I own a Visu. Here, look at my numbers. Can I have a Birkin bag? They'll be like, who are you? No, you can't have a Birkin bag. And the reason you can't do that is because Birkin has created mystique around its bag, right? And the Birkin bag can only be purchased. It has to be given to you. As in, the sales associate has to contact you and be like, oh, by the way, we have a new run of Birkin bags. You're welcome to come and pick one up. But you can only get that phone call once you've developed a relationship with the seller of the sales associate. And the way you develop that relationship, how do you do it? You buy other items. So they have lots of other items, right? They have, famously, they have scarves. They have smaller bags. They have sandals. They have belts. I bought a Birkin bag. I bought an Hermes belt for the missus, right? And you develop this relationship. So this is very well known. It's part of the mystique. And this is why people kind of love it. But this is where the antitrust case comes in. They go, hey, is this actually legal, this buying process, where you force somebody to get a Birkin bag by making them buy other things? And the way that Hermes enforces this at the store level is very smart. What's Charlie Munger's quote about incentives? Bilal, what is it?
Show me the incentive. I'll show you the what's
outcome.
The last one.
There
outcome,
you go.
There you go.
Okay, so here's the incentive. I'm going to tell you the incentive. I want you to tell me the outcome. Hermes has a commission scheme like most sales associates will get at any retail store. They get 3% on accessories. So most things under $1,000. They get 3% of that sale. They get 1.5% on small bags. Okay? They get 0% on a Birkin bag. What is the sales associate incentivized to do financially?
On that commission. That's
yeah,
what
they want to sell these other things, right?
100%.
They want to sell the other items. So this is how Hermes enforces this buying scheme. So it's not an official buying scheme, but it's incentivized that way. And they also structure it quite interestingly. So there's about 300 Hermes stores in the world. Over 300. We call it 320. And the owners of those stores actually don't know how many Birkin bags they will be given every year. It's very, there's something every year, Birkin and his headquarters in Paris, there's something called the podium. And all 300 store owners go to the HQ in Paris. And they're basically told by Paris HQ, hey, here are all the products we have this year. You have to pick for your store X amount of products in the scarf category, the shoe category, the accessory category. And we'll give you some Birkin bags. We're not going to tell you how many you're going to get. And this all creates this level of unknowing. So if you ever bought like a Rolex or Ferrari, similar things happen where Rolex closely controls the supply of the watches, obviously. And if you go to a store that sells Rolexes and you want a specific watch, they don't even know how many of those watches they'll get that year. So the store HQ level keeps everybody kind of guessing, and that creates the mystique. So... And listen, we're not lawyers here. So what I'd ask is this, Bilal. With the entire framework I said, do you think, again, not being a lawyer, do you think it's illegal what they're doing? Or do you think it's just, hey, listen, this is the mystique and I don't think anything's untoward about this model?
Yeah, that's hard to say. To be honest. Yeah, based on what you said, it's really hard for me to say. I would be making it up. But what
is your gut?
I would say is because legally it's based on that precedent. It's based on what is a rule for other people. Because to me, laws are also like not logical half the time to me.
Yeah,
so
true.
For me, it's less so about logic and what's necessarily right and wrong or fair. It's more so like what is already the case in other places. So I think it's more if like other retailers are doing the same thing, it shouldn't be that bad, obviously. But in this case, it sounds like maybe not. There, thing is, there aren't any other Hermes style.
They're one of one,
right?
That's the whole. Yeah. And the reason they're one of one is
because
they're doing
this. Yeah.
And so, like, it's a bit of a chicken and egg, right? Like, if you are a fan and customer of Hermes, like, you kind of want them to have this system. You don't want a free for all. You want the Birkin bag to be exclusive, right? Or the Kelly bag. And if the system changes, it kind of unravels all the magic of the company.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because we're talking about the 2000s and fashion like that stuff from Evisu, whatever. Obviously, the Evisu is not Hermes, right? Like a different level of, like different category. But another example is like Burberry. Do you remember what happened with Burberry?
Oh,
That's a great case study
Burberry.
Too.
Burberry.
Yeah. And so Burberry, for people who remember this, you know, it's always been a luxury brand, luxury fashion house. But then
the plaid,
I think
famous plaid.
Yeah, the famous plaid. But then in the early 2000s, I don't know if this was like this in the US or not, but growing up in the UK, have you heard of this phrase called chav? C-H-A-V?
No.
So it's kind of like, I don't know, I had to, let me define this by Google because I'm going to say, let me just define chav here because let's let Google. A young person of a type characterized by coarse and brash behavior. Now, this is stupid. But basically, it's like there were these people in the UK, especially that were wearing like tracksuit bottoms, you know, wearing like sportswear or whatever. And then they would wear like the Burberry hat. And they were often wearing like fake stuff, right? So it wasn't just them, but it became such a big deal for them as a brand. It devalued their brand so much. They had to almost, I think, move away from making the plaid like front and center for a while. And then I forgot the person's name, the person who came in and reinvented them and stuff like that did an amazing job. I think, was it Angela Ahrens or something? She ended up going to Apple as well. Let me just see if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, but anyway, whatever it was, it was a really interesting example. But the point here is that any luxury brand, as soon as it becomes too available, you get the fake stuff out there. Or another thing that when I worked on like luxury fashion brands at Google, there were a lot of them were devaluing through discounting. So like Michael Kors is probably a good example of one where, again, I don't know if that counts as a actual luxury brand.
It's not super luxury, but I know what you're saying.
That's kind of the point. That's my point is that they became the Macy's. You go to Macy's, you get like 80% off. Or like, you know, so that they're not nowhere near at the level of any of those things. They're way more mass market. But they were trying to, it was hard for them to go back on that, right? So a lot of these brands would say, oh, we've done this. We had this history. Guess was another one that like I worked with back in the day. Guess in the 80s, 90s, again, they're not luxury
massive,
fashion at all.
Massive.
But they were massive, like iconic brand. They're the ones who broke a lot of, like, you know, a lot of the models that became super famous in the 90s. A lot of them were Guess girls. Then later, when we worked on it, it was like 2010 or 2012 or something. That was, you know, you go to Macy's, you buy it for $12 or like $18 or something. So they had to, again, go through their own reckoning around who their customer was. There was actually quite an interesting case study there around Hispanic people wearing their stuff. And again, without getting anyone in trouble, the owner is a bit of an old school guy, right? And he's
always
got
like
a lot
the Jay-Z
of controversy.
Situation with Dom Perignon, right?
Exactly. So there's a little bit of race stuff in there as well. But go for
it. I love that you brought up Burberry, though. I love that you brought up Burberry because it helps tease out the Hermes story a bit more. Hermes, famously, all its manufacturing happens in France. They have these ateliers or these workshops. Burberry moved some of their manufacturing to China. And a thing to note, and you kind of talked about it, when brands kind of lose their edge, two things you identify with a customer base, right? Like if the brand has a certain image they want to hold and a different customer base, you mentioned Latinos, or in the case of Jay-Z and Dom Perignon, Dom didn't want rappers. Was it Dom Perignon? They didn't want rappers.
I think so.
This is the reason that Jay-Z bought Ace of Spades or like created Ace of Spades, right?
Yeah.
And
definitely ain't Ciroc because you know what's happening with that.
Yeah,
right?
it ain't Ciroc with Diddy. But
yeah.
Let me, the thing I'll say about the Burberry story is keeping something tied to a locality is actually one of the key tenets of luxury. Like Ferrari will never manufacture a car in Canada because it will lose the mystique. So Burberry actually did some, I think, as they're expanding, because I love how you mentioned Burberry kind of lost its edge. I think they went to Asia for a bit and people are like, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
It's no longer made in Britain. It's no longer made in the UK. Like, this is why you're losing your sheen, right? But that's kind of my takeaway from
And actually, while you're saying that, Trung, I did check that it was between 2001 and 2005, Burberry became associated with Chav and football hooligan culture. That was what I was referencing. And it was Christopher Bailey. That's who I was thinking of. And then Angela Ahrens came later. I think she was the CEO in 2010s. And she did a lot of amazing work with them as well. So if anyone's interested in like luxury or reinventing a brand after being devalued or having to deal with kind of a crisis of the brand, like when did they start? 1856, right? Like, what's that, 160, 70 years? Like, you've got 100 years, all right? 115, 20 years or 150 years of having this luxury brand, and all it takes is, you know, Jack Butcher after the factory taking it to the football, you know, wearing it with his lads, you know, like just being like getting it recorded. It's being getting in trouble.
Ibiza with all with the Burberry bucket man. Hats.
And I'm so You're sad done. Jack couldn't join today because literally he sent me the t-shirt he was going to wear. I don't know. He sent me a t-shirt. Ibiza's finest. Hopefully he'll bring it next week. But that old school Jack Butcher was devaluing the brand. No offense, Jack. I know you're...
No offense. We love you, man.
I'm messing around. Obviously, I was doing the same thing. So, but anyway, it's a really interesting example if anyone's interested.
Well, you know what? Last thing I'll add on the Burberry thing. Why don't we finish with this? Why don't you do the AMA question that we've been pinned on about what I actually do for a living? What do I tell my kid?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. We're done with Hermes, yeah? So let's just do... Yeah, what is the time? We got... just real quick, do you want to talk about Bluey or you're right? You want to save that for when Jack's here?
No, we should hold
that
for next week. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, let's do an AMA question that was left over. This was from, I think Elena had asked this on YouTube and I literally saved it and every week we haven't been able to talk about it. So the question was, how does Trung explain what his job is to his kid?
This is a hilarious question because it's a running joke in my family. My family of three right now. You know, most parents will go to the office or like, will come, like, you know, you take your kid, mom will be like, let's go to the doctor's office and see dad, or let's go down to the lawyer's office, or let's go see him down at the site, right? He's project managing this new building. There is no site for Trung. There is not. And the running joke we had is my son goes, you know, when I go to school for bring your dad to school day, like what do I tell them? And then, you know how we always joke about Barely AI and how Trung's just shit posting this random app that he's making with a couple of buddies. I go, I don't know. Just tell your son, tell your school I'm a software entrepreneur. So,
that's it.
I'm not really a software entrepreneur, even in the slightest, but he's latched onto it.
I mean, technically you are. It still counts, even if it's an AI rapper of
yeah. But I'll tell you what's funny. GPT. My son literally now just goes, as a joke, we'll just be eating dinner. He'll go, Dad, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, ah. And he makes me say, I'm a software entrepreneur. And then he goes, I'm a software entrepreneur.
Oh my God.
And he trolls me.
Sorry, I don't know if you want to talk about this on the show or not. We could talk about it after you like. Does he have the humor yet? Like, can you see it in like the
young
Trung energy?
he's got some humor game. I'm just going to put that. We don't have to go deep in it. But he's got some fair game.
Enough. Fair enough.
What I was going to say, the last thing I'll add is, I mean, I tell him I write for a living. And so he gets that. He knows William Shakespeare, but like, I'm like, a little bit different.
William Shakespeare.
Yeah. I'm like,
he knows William Shakespeare.
And he reads,
and
he knows, and he reads books. And I'm like, yeah, probably a little bit different than the books you're doing. Like those are a little bit more professionalized and educational. But so the running joke to answer Alina's question is, he makes me say a software entrepreneur and then trolls me and goes, I'm a software entrepreneur.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, that's it.
Beautiful.
That's the answer.
Love. Yeah. We'll have to get Jack to share his as well with the kid, how he explains his job. Because his is even more, I mean, like, I guess he can say he's an artist, he's a designer. I don't know what he says, but let's ask him next time. All right, Trung, that was great, man. Anything else before we wrap up, mate?
No, Gucci, dude. That was... hopefully Jack will be back next episode. more edge of the internet-y
stuff.
Well,
next week I'll be conjoined because it's 3 years of NIA next Tuesday when we record.
Oh my goodness, amazing,
anniversary.
Dude.
So now
we should. Yeah, that is amazing. Maybe we should knock off a couple more of those AMAs we've been sitting on.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do that as like a special for next week. All right, guys. Thanks for being here. We appreciate the support. And we will see you guys next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Amazing. Peace.